Testament book of Joshua. This is where we are, one of the places where we are in our daily Bible reading right now. I hope you'll use the time maybe to renew your involvement in that. If you, like me, have let it slip while we've been involved in other things, I wanted to mention this morning that I was thankful to see Mackenzie back from her trip to Tanzania and for her service there. Also, several of you have been involved in Bible camp work in one way or another all through this summer. Some of you still will be doing that. Thank you for your service in that way. And please remember our guests who will be with us in our Wednesday evening series. This coming week, we have Chris Brill, who is the new associate minister at Mountain Home. He's an old friend and co-worker of ours in, at camp over the years. And Hayden and Lexi were here this morning. I don't know if I see them tonight. I don't see very well. So you guys plan on being with us then. And then week after next, we have Daniel Meinson, who is the preacher from Forsyth, who's coming to be with us. And of course, Daniel grew up with us here, and he's excited about coming to do that, and we're excited about having him. Okay, look at my title. I, of course, have not lived in the promised land. I am, like you, hoping to. I hope to end up in the promised rest that remains for the people of God that the Hebrew writer describes in Hebrews chapter 4. Joshua, however, lived in the promised land, among the first to ever have that privilege, at least the land promised to the covenant people of God in the Old Testament. Joshua was a man of faith and a faithful man. The New Testament even labels him in that way for us. Against the background of a 40-year classroom where in the wilderness he found out it was best to trust God and to be loyal to Him, Joshua was only one of only two adult men who left bondage in Egypt and entered promise in Canaan. And it was because he was willing to be loyal to God, even when it looked like that what God promised made no sense. Within the book of Joshua, Joshua begins to discover some of the principles that are important to the people of God in every new stage in their lives. Maybe in a new job, a new place in our lives, marriage-wise, or with congregational life, or even during the periods of renewal in our lives, these principles turn out to be true. And as I've been trying to read, I've been kind of watching for some of the things that stand out here. In Joshua 1 and verse 7, the drama begins with Joshua being told, "Only be strong and very courageous, being careful to do all according to the law that Moses, my servant, commanded you. Do not turn from it to the right hand or to the left, that you may have good success wherever you go." That's what God wants His people to have and what He tries to guide them into. And then Joshua gets the people all together before they go over into the land and explains to them what God has called him to do and what his charge is, and the people all answer him in verse 16 and following, "All that you have commanded us we will do, and wherever you send us we will go." And that's especially the 2.5 tribes who were going to inherit east of the river. So all good intentions, all rich assurance begins this story. And now we go beginning to cross over into the land of promise without Moses, and now only with the law and with the intention to live up to it. What do we find out? Number one, in life in the promised land teaches the people of God that you will find those who want to believe in the Lord in some very, very unexpected places. Either in their lives or where they live, you will find some people who want to believe in the Lord, the God of Israel. In this case, I'm talking about Rahab, who lived in the city of Jericho, the first of the large Canaanite, the large and prosperous and powerful Canaanite cities over there across the river, across the Jordan in the promised land. Had a wall all the way around it. Had a reputation for luxury and power, but also a reputation for evil. And Rahab, perhaps, is representative of that background. We know her as Rahab the harlot, or Rahab the prostitute. That may mean that she was devoted to some of the pagan deities of the Canaanites, about which, by the way, you need to do some reading for yourself about the Canaanite religions to disabuse yourself of any thought that might come along that God somehow was unfair to these people and unsettling them from their land to give the land to Israel. It was terrible, the nature and the degradation that was worked by involvement in Canaanite religion. And that way you would find out what I mean when I say that Rahab's background might indicate that she was involved in that religious activity. Two spies were sent over to spy out Jericho for Israel, to see what they were facing, to see what God was promising. Word got out in the city that there were spies there, and the king of Jericho and everybody was looking for them, but Rahab hid them and protected them. James tells us that she did that by faith in James chapter 2. What did he mean? Well, here in Joshua chapter 2, she comes to these two men as she's hiding them, and she says, this is verse 9 in Joshua 2. I know that the Lord has given you the land, and that the fear of you has fallen upon us, and that all the inhabitants of the land melt away before you. For we've heard how the Lord would be the God of Israel, dried up the water of the Red Sea before you when you came out of Egypt, and what you did to the two kings of the Amorites who were beyond the Jordan, to Sihon and Og, whom you devoted to destruction. You destroyed, in other words, God's word. And as soon as we heard it, our hearts melted, and there's no spirit left in any man because of you. For the Lord your God, He is God in the heavens above and on the earth beneath. Now therefore, please swear to me by the Lord that as I've dealt kindly with you, you'll deal kindly with my father's house. Give me a sure sign that you'll save alive my father and mother and brothers and sisters and all who belong to them, and deliver our lives from death. You remember how they made arrangements with her to leave a scarlet cord hanging down the wall. And if she would do that, they would save her. All she had to go on was their promise that at that sign they would save her family alive. And of course they did. The point is that she had only heard about what God did for Israel in Egypt and then over there in the land of the Amorites. But it had caused her to believe that that God was the Lord of heaven and earth. Now, you and I, knowing about the Lord Jesus Christ, how He lived, what He taught, what He's done for us, have something of even more powerful appeal than than what she knew about the God who destroys his enemies. We have news of a God who saves his enemies, or who wants to. We might be surprised yet where we would find people who want to believe in that Lord. The second lesson that comes out in the Promised Land here is that it's mighty important to remember how you got there. But it's also real easy to forget, and to forget way too quickly. God goes to great lengths in Joshua chapters 2 and 3 to make it visually obvious and unforgettable that the people of Israel were only inheriting this land because He was giving it to them. Not because they deserved it, or not because they earned it, or not because they conquered it on their own power. The Jordan is at flood stage, spread out over the valley. Some estimate maybe as much as a half mile or a mile wide at some times during that. And it's swift. What God has happen is for the people to consecrate themselves, and then for the priests who bore the Ark of the Covenant to go out there in front of them almost half a mile, if you figure it up. And then the people were to follow. And when they got to the river, as soon as the feet of the priest touched the river, the water stopped and began to back up. And the priest stood there, and the people were able to pass through on dry ground. But what God insisted is that they were to gather up some rocks, one from each, for representing each tribe, from that dry riverbed, and set them up over there on the other side when they got into the Promised Land, so that when their children came along and asked them what this all meant, they could say that God gave them the land, that they entered it on dry ground just as they had left slavery before on dry ground. I've just summarized really most of chapters 3 and 4 of Joshua. That was a way of indicating that this is how it can be remembered. Let your children know Israel passed over this Jordan on dry ground. Chapter 4 and verse 22. And then verse 24. So that all the peoples of the earth may know that the hand of the Lord is mighty, and that you may fear the Lord your God forever. Verse 24 of chapter 4. How is the world supposed to know that if God's own people can't remember it? God has always made sure that He provided some means by which His people could visually remember what He did for them. We had a case of that in this room this morning. We met here, and Luis led us in beautiful prayers about what the unleavened bread and the fruit of the vine calls to our mind. We remember. We need to remember. It's important that we don't forget. A week or so ago, I received a copy of a little publication I get, which this time was written by Gene Shelburne. He tells the story of his grandfather, Shelburne, whose name was George, who was a leader in the West Texas community where he lived at the time. He was an elder in the church. He was a justice of the peace. He was Rotary Club president. He was a good influence in that small community. So that when his grandfather, George, died, his longtime fellow citizens, his neighbors in that little community, wanted to make some kind of statement of how much they appreciated what he had done for their community. So they named their one city park Shelburne Park. They put a big sign on, up on the old web wire backstop at the ball field, Shelburne Park. He said time went by and he and his wife were taking their two young grandsons on some trip that was going to take them within 8 or 10 miles of there. He said that had always kind of made him well up with a bit of pride about their name, and he thought it would be worth a detour to take them around there in that little community so they could see Shelburne Park. It was two decades after that sign had been put up, and he said they got over there, and drove to that baseball field side of the park, and they found the backstop about to collapse, and that special sign nowhere to be seen. He said, I doubt that more than half a dozen of the people still in that dwindling town had ever even seen the sign or had any idea what the official name of their park might be. He says, do I need to tell you that our grandsons were not impressed with the tour I'd given them? Nor could they detect even a hint of the disappointment that swept over my soul that afternoon. How could such a wise, dedicated, faithful leader be so soon forgotten? I know how. Because people forget. And we will too if we don't make a special effort to remember. Our God is not so unrighteous as to forget our labor of love and our patience of hope. Hebrews chapter 6 reassures us. We, however, are not like Him that way. It's really important to remember and real easy to forget. And even in the promised land, you see that. A third lesson that Joshua helps us see in the promised land is that God is able to bless His people beyond what they can ask or think when they're willing to do just as He says. Now, the beyond what we ask or think is from Hebrews 3 and verse 20. That's where it says God is able to do beyond what we ask or think. And He's the same God in the Old Testament He was. He sends them to this impressive, powerful city. I don't know how big the walls were. I didn't go back and look it up, but I remember there could be houses built on the top of the walls. God told His people, I want you to go over there to Jericho. I want you every day for 7 days to get up in the morning, have the priest and the trumpets lead you, and march around the city. Then sit down and rest the rest of the day. And then the next morning, won't you get up and do it again? I won't give you the city. The walls are going to fall. But I want you to do that for 7 days. What would you have done after 5 days? And it still looked exactly the same. What would you have done? Most of us in our heart of hearts can answer that question. We would have done it if we worked up our nerve. I mean, we'd have to get back up. We'd have to get past the, that doesn't make any sense. I don't understand this. Why do we have to do it that way? Wouldn't it be better for us all just to gang up and attack one gate? We'd have to get past that to do it the first time. And you remember the nature and the character of these people. What did they do when they'd been led across the Red Sea on dry ground? Before they got to the first place to camp, what did they do? They already had complained and griped and grumbled about being brought to the sea to be killed there. And then they got over there. Why have you brought us out here so we can die of thirst in this wilderness? It's the same people. They're just one generation removed from that. So did you suppose there would have been any of those kind of folks in the ranks marching around, grumbling about the coach, so to speak here? You can see what I mean. But what happened? 7 days, they did it. They did it like he said. Joshua chapter 6 tells us the story. And what happened? They blew they marched that last time, as God says, verse 15, seventh day, they rose up early and they did that the same manner. They marched around the city that day, the seventh time. At the seventh time, when the priest had blown the trumpets, Joshua said to the people, "Shout for the Lord." Travis led us and shout aloud. Shout for the Lord. He's given you the city. And the city and all that's within it will be devoted to the Lord for destruction. It was judged by Him. It was belonged to the Lord in that way. Only Rahab will be saved alive in her household. And it all happened that way. It all happened that way at God's promise. The Hebrew writer in Hebrews 11 and verse 30 says that those walls fell by faith when the people had marched around it seven times. Faith is faith like that, which takes God at His word and acts when you have no reason to do. Nobody attacks a city that way. They only do it because God tells them to, and He gives them the city. There are challenges for us in our world in doing what God says. Some of them relate to moral life. Some of them will relate to doctrinal belief. Some of them relate to the work that we try to do. Some of them relate to our homes and families. We still need to be people who do what God says, try to do what God says, because we believe Him. He's still able to bless His people that way. Fourth, Joshua learns that the presence of any one case of disregard for holiness among the people of God can spell disaster for everybody. You remember the story unfolds. This amazing victory is followed by an embarrassingly terrible defeat at the hands of just the smallest population, an insignificant little village at Ai. How can a people who won a great victory at Jericho be put to shame at Ai? Well, God had told them, "You don't take any silver, gold, garment, or anything from Jericho. It's all devoted to destruction. This is all an act of judgment. It's all holy because I am doing this for you. This is not something that you've conquered and where you're therefore free to take the spoil for yourself." But you remember, after Ai and the defeat, and Joshua falls down and weeps before God and asks Him why this has happened. And you remember, God says, "You got sin in the camp." Remember, they go through the process of trying to figure out, what is He talking about? What is it? They end up with Achan. Remember what had happened? Achan said, I saw a goodly Babylonian garment, the older version says, and I saw that silver and the gold, and I coveted them, and I took them. And see, they're hidden inside my tent with the silver underneath. That's chapter 7, verse 21. Now, what Achan was guilty of is intruding into what was holy to God. And that's true, he's guilty of coveting and stealing and lying. But Israel got defeated because in the camp there was a disregard for holiness, which would have destroyed the whole people if God would have let it go. And it's still a fact that a root of bitterness, the Hebrew writer says in Hebrews 12, can spring up among us, and it can cause us to be injured, cause the cause of God to be injured. And that's an important lesson to be learned for the people of God. They had to deal with it. They had to be willing to let God deal with it. It was a severe thing, but it had to be. For a people to be holy to the Lord, they have to appreciate, or we have to appreciate, what being holy to the Lord means. It belongs to Him and not to us. And it's not simply a small thing if we step over on His ground and intrude into what's His. And you see that in the promised land more clearly than anywhere else. And then the other thing, somebody kidded me one time about 5 points. And I said, sometimes I do 7. Only 5 this time. 3 sometimes this morning. We did 3, and well, then 3 subheads to that. You see here, the other part of this comes at the end of Joshua chapter 8, starting at verse 30. The wonderful thing to be remembered in the promised land is that covenant relationship can be and should be renewed. Now, after the terrible defeats and after they've begun to take some of the land, take possession of some of the land, they get over to Mount Ebal, and opposite it was Mount Gerizim. And God had already decreed, you look at the end of Deuteronomy, at Deuteronomy 32, and chapter 31, 32 and following, they set up at that place this altar made out of uncut stones, never touched by an iron tool. And they offered burnt offerings, and Joshua read the book of the law to them. He read them the covenant with its blessings and its curses. And this new generation, verse 34, mentions the blessing and the curse according to all that's written in the book of the law. And verse 35 says, there was not a word of all that Moses commanded that Joshua did not read before all the assembly of God and the women and the little ones and the sojourners who lived among them. They were renewing the covenant relationship of God, their intention to live for Him. They still were not going to be perfect, and this would need to be done repeatedly in their lives, but in our lives, we should be grateful for the grace of God, which allows covenant relationship to be renewed without taking for granted that it just automatically is. And another part of what we've done on this Lord's Day is the intention to say, you know, this to us is the first day of the week, not the last day of the weekend. And we belong to the Lord, and we want to live for Him this week. And with His help, we will. There are some lessons I learned in the Promised Land, even though I've never been there yet. I think they're true, and I think they're principles that will help all of us. And maybe in your heart tonight, you think of them and you see reason here in one of these to to act yourself in relation to God. Maybe you're needing to be obedient to the gospel. It'd be a joy to assist you in baptism into Christ. Or maybe we're needing to pray about something that you've not been feeling right about in your life. If we can help you, let us know that while we stand and sing this song together.